Speak and I write for a living on the courtroom, on the radio, to clients all over. And I think we all do. We all make our livings. We all have relationships. And it all depends on our ability to communicate and to do it in the way that makes sense, the way that's clear, I think is a really important thing. And we all make mistakes. I make them all the time. And in fact, you listeners, you always call in and text in and tell me when I'm pronouncing something wrong. But with us tonight is someone who studies words and how we speak and how we talk about things and how some people say things that may seem right but may not be the best of choices. Grant Barrett is a lexicographer. I'm saying that wrong, probably. He's going to correct me. Linguist and public speaker. He co-hosts a nationwide public radio show called Away with Words. You might have heard it. He's the author of The Perfect English Grammar and the compiler of the Official Dictionary and Unofficial English and the Oxford Dictionary of American Political Slang. Welcome to the show, Grant. How are you?
Hello, Karen. Everything's great. How are you?
Good. All right. I thought that we'd start with just trying to get through as many of these. You gave me some really common mistakes that people make. I don't want to say mistakes, but it's just things that people say that may not be the very best way to say it.
Right.
You know, we're not trying to chastise people because I'm learning more here than probably anyone. So let's start with ETC.
Oh, yeah. So we want to use ETC in order to say more of the same, right? You say apples, bananas, et cetera, right? But the problem is it's a Latin word borrowed into English, and we kind of get it wrong. There's like four major pronunciations, and only one of them really is the best pronunciation, and that is et cetera. It's E-T, not E-X at the beginning. But the problem is the T and the C in our mouth want to do something different. It's very easy for the form and shape of the mouth to slip and turn into an X sound instead of a TS sound. So, again, it's a real common mistake. Another thing that people do, just to be on the lookout for, is sometimes they make it one syllable too short. They say et cetera, but it actually needs that other syllable in there. It's et cetera, usually spelled as one word these days in dictionaries.
So now we know. And you know what? I have to say, I couldn't care less.
So could you care less or couldn't care less?
Well, which one is right? Could I care less or couldn't I care less? What am I trying to say?
All right. So people have been complaining about other people saying, I could care less, since at least the 1960s. So this is a longstanding disagreement. The original form was, I couldn't care less, meaning I care absolutely not at all for whatever you're talking about. And there's no more care left in me, right? But the early forms of this were variable. One of them was as if I could care less. As if I could care less. And in that form, the negative isn't really clear there. As if I could care less. There's no not apparent there. It is a negative. It's a negative statement. And so that shortened easily becomes I could care less. Still negative, even still without the not in it. And so it's kind of logical once you have it explained. It's very easy to look at other people and say, well, they must just be dumb or uneducated. But so often when you hear a lot of people saying a thing that's not quite right, there's usually a really matter-of-fact, ordinary reason that they're doing it. And it's usually not because they're lazy or stupid.
So what would be the best thing to say? If I really didn't give one flying you-know-what about what you're saying, I would say, Grant, I
couldn't, C-O-U-L-D-N apostrophe T, couldn't care less.
I couldn't care less.
Okay. I couldn't. I want to tell you another thing about this, though. The thing with a lot of people who say, I could care less, they've rationalized it. And very cleverly, though, what they say is, when I say I could care less, what I mean is, I care a tiny little bit. And, you know, if you keep pushing me, I might stop caring that much at all and care nothing. So what they think that they're saying is, I could care less, meaning don't press me. Don't rush me on this. Don't push too hard.
Now, this is one of my favorites. This is one of my favorites. Supposedly versus supposedly, right?
All right. Now, we're on the radio, so you and I are going to have to pronounce this very clearly so people can say the difference. So supposedly with a B-L-Y at the end, B as in boy, and supposedly with the D-L-Y as in dad or David, right, at the end. And the thing is, 100% of the time, people mean to say supposedly with a D in there, but sometimes, try both words in your mouth. Just do this. Supposedly, supposedly. Supposedly. And what happens is, feel where the mouth and the tongue and the teeth, feel what they're all doing. They're very close. It is incredibly easy to slip or to just say the other thing instead of the correct, better choice. So supposedly with a D is what you want. If you find yourself saying supposedly, you're probably wrong and you need to move on. Just think a second about it, and the D form will come naturally to you.
All right, let's hone in on the next one. Or is it homin?
Well, Karen, that is actually a question I want to ask you. If you were preparing a legal brief, are you, and you want to say, I want to hone in on this issue so that we can get to the bottom of the matter, are you saying hone in with an N, H-O-N-E, or are you saying home in with an M?
I would say N, with an N as in
you
Nancy.
Would.
I would, but am I wrong?
Okay.
Oh,
well,
no.
Let me ask you, do you mean that you are sharpening or improving the thinking as you're getting to the idea?
No, I'm thinking of focus. I'm thinking I'd like to hone in and focus.
Yeah, so the better choice in this case is home, H-O-M-E.
Ah.
I want to give you a trick to get this right. Two things. Think of homing pigeons, which go home when you release them, and think of homing beacons, which are a thing that, say, a ship that's lost at sea might have a beacon so that the rescuers can find it, right? Both of these are about zeroing in on a target.
Okay.
Now, there is a strong case that a lot of people make about hone in, H-O-N-E. What do we do when we sharpen a knife? We hone it, right? And that makes a lot of sense. I'm like, well, I'm sharpening my thinking. I'm getting towards the idea by eliminating all the stuff I don't want and really just leaving only the fine point of it. Makes a lot of sense. It's a very good rationalization, which is why right now, if you look at the data, about 50-50 in younger speakers, people under 30. So we're at a point where both of these expressions are widely used.
Let's talk about intensive purposes. For all intensive purposes, this conversation is blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, this conversation is super nerdy, Karen.
Well, hey, we're both word nerds, so.
Right. Two different kinds of word nerd. Okay, so you've seen people write, maybe on a Facebook post or Reddit or something, they write, well, for all intensive purposes, I believe that X should be Y. And they write intensive, I-N-T-E-N-S-I-V-E. But what they should be writing is all intents and purposes. They're taking intense, I-N-T-E-N-T-S, and it's the word and, A-N-D, and they're making it into intensive. And they're rationalizing this in the process of creating what is known as an eggcorn, E-G-G-C-O-R-N. An eggcorn is a linguistic term that was coined when somebody doesn't quite understand the phrase or the idiom or the expression, and they come up with a version that's really close to it that kind of makes some sense. And the word itself, eggcorn, is an eggcorn because acorn, like the nut that falls from an oak tree, some people mishear that. They mishear A-C-O-R-N as E-G-G-C-O-R-N. They think it's eggcorn. So in all intents and purposes, is an eggcorn. It makes a little bit of sense because you're talking about being very intense towards purpose. And the thing that throws us is that intense is a plural noun is really rare outside of this expression in English. It's not comma. We're more likely to say intentions. And so your brain is doing this automatic problematic math saying, that can't be right. Nobody says intense. I think they mean intensive, and you're just putting it in there.
So all intents and purposes. And then one final one before we go to break. And this one, I understand the difference, but I don't use it correctly on a regular basis, and that is farther and further. Can you quickly tell our listeners how do you use those two differently?
Farther is about distance and further is about everything else. We went farther than the map showed. That's with an A, farther. She took the matter further all the way to the board of directors. That's with a U.
Got it. Well, that's easy. Farther is for is for distance and further is for everything else. And before we talk any farther, before we talk any further, we're going to have to take a break. We're talking to Grant Barrett. He's a linguist and public speaker, and we're talking about grammar. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about derivations and some very interesting phrases. This is the Karen Conti Show on WGN.
More than words is all you-
We're talking about words here with Grant Barrett, who's a lexicographer, linguist, and public speaker. He co-hosts a nationwide public radio show called Away with Words. And we're talking about word derivations. We're talking about misuse of words. And one of our texters, Grant, said people who want to say or write voila when they mean voila. Can you weigh in on that one?
Yeah, so the French is V-O-I-L-A, and there's an accent on the A. It's a grave accent, which means it goes from the upper left to the lower right. But because the word is slowly becoming anglicized, people hear it third, fourth, fifth, infinite hand. They don't hear it directly from a French speaker. And so they're doing their best guess, and they write it as W-A-L-L-A-H and a variety of, I think somewhere I have a list of like 13 different spellings I've found. So this is a natural process of anglification of a foreign word.
Interesting.
I kind of, as a French speaker myself, I would prefer that they keep the French spelling, but I get it. That accent's weird, and it's clearly foreign, so you try to make it English.
Well, for all intents and purposes, they get it right.
Yeah, right.
Okay, so now let's switch over to phrases that we use every day. And, you know, I guess we just use these phrases and we don't think about where the what the history is. These are some ones. Let's start with to butter someone up. Where did that come from?
This dates to the 1700s, and the idea is that butter is a greasy substance, and if you butter someone, you make things smoother between you. You are literally lubricating the situation.
And that makes a lot of sense. And now, some of these make a lot of sense, and some of these, it's a strain. I almost say like, wow, that comes a long way. How about break the ice?
Okay, so this goes back to a time when you might have spent a lot more time boating places or traveling across water courses. And what you might do is you would break the ice if you were the first one there after a freeze so that the people behind you would have an easier passage. And so you're making it easier for the people around you. So the metaphor that we use at, say, a social gathering comes directly from this kind of prosaic day-to-day use that we no longer really have or think of.
And another one that is widely used, and I think I was wrong about this one, which is mad as a hatter. I'm mad as a hatter. Now, what do you think? You would think that would be Alice in Wonderland, right?
But no, it's older than that. They get the mad hatter from this metaphor. I think Lewis Carroll really came up with the idea from knowing that hatters, milliners, often worked with mercury, and mercury is a poisonous substance, and it affects the nervous system. It causes all kinds of ailments and physical tics, and you look like you're off kilter, off balance. And so hatters were known to have what was called the hatter's shakes from this. And so being mad doesn't mean angry. It means being crazy or insane or just being non-normal. So it's 1800s or so.
Interesting.
Yeah.
How about barking up the wrong tree?
So when was the last time you went hunting with dogs, Karen?
I haven't done it yet, but...
Okay. Well, if you go hunting with dogs, they're pretty smart animals, but sometimes whatever they're chasing slips by them and goes up a different tree, and so they're literally barking at the base of the wrong tree, and the animal is up a different tree, possibly hopping from tree to tree, getting away.
Oh, there we go. And while we're talking about animals, and I'm not sure this is on our list, but how about raining cats and dogs? Do you know where that one comes from?
There is a common false story floating around that I'm going to take less than a minute to debunk. It is not from thatched roofs with dogs and cats falling down through thatched roofs. It's simply talking about large drops of rain that resemble living creatures themselves because they're so violent and wild. That's it. It's really just a comparison to the size of big rain. It says nothing whatsoever to animals falling through roofs.
Now let's go to another animal reference, which is cat got your tongue.
Yeah, another one to debunk. It has nothing to do with sailors and the cat of nine tails. It's simply about the playful natures of cats who will go after any wiggling thing, including your tongue. Dates to about the 1850s.
So when you say cat got your tongue, but you're not talking, so you're saying what's wrong with you? Oh, so like the cat got and scratched or ate your tongue, so therefore you can't talk.
Well, the same way that a cat will go after a dragged feather or a bit of loose string, if you're gabbing a lot and your tongue is wagging, why wouldn't the cat maybe go after that too?
Interesting. How about let the cat out of the bag, now that we're talking about cats?
Did you ever hear the expression a pig in a poke?
Sure. Yeah.
Do you know what it means?
Not really. I mean, I don't.
Like a scam, right?
A scam, right.
Or a ripoff, right? Yeah. So both of these expressions are related. There was an old scam dating back to the 1700s that say that you were going to a country fair, and in order to sell you piglets, which you would then feed and grow up into a full hog and then butcher for meat, they would sell them in bags just because it's easier to carry a piglet around in a bag, right, than in any other kind of device. But sometimes the scammers would put a cat in there instead. And so your job was to open the bag to make sure there's a piglet in there before you paid for it. And that was literally letting the cat out of the bag. You were revealing whether or not there was a scam involved. And a pig and a poke is another name for a bag or a sack.
Interesting. All right. Giving you the cold shoulder. I'm giving you the cold shoulder.
Yeah, this is just about the warmth and coldness. So we think of warmth as a positive emotional response to somebody, right? And coldness is a negative emotional response. It's the opposite of a shoulder to cry on. It's the shoulder that is withdrawn from you and offers you no love or comfort.
Oh, get one's goat.
It's not related to a cold shoulder of lamb, which is what some people think.
Oh, okay. I didn't think that.
Yeah.
get one's goat. Where did that come from?
All right. So horse racing, is this something that you've been to? Don't go down to the track
sure.
once in a while?
I was just at Churchill Downs, yes.
Wonderful. So you were there for the Derby, and I don't know if they still do this, but what they used to do is they would put goats in with these very nervous and high-strung horses because it calms them down. The presence of another living creature, be it human or animal, can make a horse more pliable when it comes time to run the race. And so in order to get some advantage over your competitors back in the day, you might slip into the stables and take the goat away from the racehorse so that the horse was nervous come race time. And that was literally getting that horse's goat.
Interesting, like a service goat. Like
yeah, with the little vest and the whole thing, yes.
I can see it now. And this one wasn't on our list, but as long as we're talking about horses, let's get it straight from the horse's mouth.
Oh, so straight from the horse's mouth. This goes back to a joke that people would tell about when you tried to sell a horse for more than it was worth or claim that it was younger than it really is. The way that you tell is you look at its teeth, because the older a horse is, the more the gums have receded and the longer the teeth look. So when you get the truth about something, you don't listen to the owner of the horse or the person selling it. You look in the horse's mouth to get the real information about the quality of that animal.
And you just said another one here, which was long in the tooth, which probably goes back to
same thing. Length
of the teeth, meaning that they're getting a little old.
Exactly right.
We went through all of these. Grant Barrett, thank you so much for joining us. Can you tell?
Oh, Karen, it was a pleasure.
That was fun. Can you tell our listeners where they can reach you and where they can listen to your radio show?
Yeah, just look for our website, waywardradio.org. We're on coast to coast. We're kind of hit parts of Chicago through Wisconsin Public Radio, but just go to waywardradio.org.
Grant Barrett, thank you so much for joining us. Have a good night.